Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The postcards from Florida say paradise. The home prices up and down in the last few years, says New Yorker magazine writer George Packer, say Ponzi scheme. Packer has reported famously from all over the world, Iraq, Ivory Coast, you name it. This time, he's settled in on the Gulf Coast of Florida and the ghost suburbs hollowed out there by foreclosure. It is harrowing. This hour, On Point, George Packer on the heart of the housing collapse in Florida. You can join the conversation. Have you seen it? Do you live it? The dystopia of life in the housing meltdown in the sunshine state. And what about your state? Will Florida and housing come back? Joining me now from New York is George Packer, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. He's reported on war in Iraq, atrocities in Sierra Leone, civil unrest in the Ivory Coast. His big article this week is The Ponzi State, Florida's Foreclosure Disaster. George Packer, welcome back to On Point.
Good to be back with you, Tom.
Put us there, if you would. You paint some very vivid pictures here. You start out on State Road 54 in Pasco County, Florida. What jumped out at you?
Yeah, I was driving along this state road with a friend from Tampa who was sort of my guide. And he said, well, we got to go north to Pasco County to see the ghost subdivisions. And I said, what do you mean ghost subdivisions? And he said, well, you'll see. And we began turning into these gated or ungated developments that all have sort of high British-sounding names like Seven Oaks and Country Walk and Hamilton Park. And what we found was nobody, maybe one person stringing up Christmas lights or watering a lawn. Now, granted, it was the afternoon and suburbs do tend to empty out during the day, but this was something eerier than just the midday emptiness of a typical suburb. A lot of for sale signs, a lot of obviously unoccupied houses, and yet everything in good condition, as if they were waiting for occupants to come. Lawns were fairly well mowed. Houses looked pristine. In fact, some of them looked never used, and they had not been used. They had been built, and there had been no buyer, and the developer was still waiting for the occupants. And so there was a kind of hollowness to the perfection of life under the aquamarine sky of the Gulf Coast of Florida, and a kind of almost an ephemerality. It was as if life had just vanished in the blink of an eye. Mm. It had actually taken a few years, which we can talk about, and it was obviously the housing collapse that had caused it. But physically, it was stunning. And in other places, it was even more vivid. No houses at all, just open fields with street lamps and street signs and even paved streets marked out, but no houses because the developer had been caught by the crisis and had stopped building at maybe one-tenth of capacity, so that people were living in a house surrounded by open fields and at the end of the field another house. So they really had no neighbors. They didn't know their neighbors. They were more isolated than even the typical suburbanite feels, and they had to get in their car and drive a long way just to see people. So there was a feeling of abandonment, as if that part of the state and that kind of life, the life of the subdivision far away from the cities, had begun to lose its life.
You've got the whole gamut here, from pristine and empty and waiting for buyers not there at the moment, to perfectly empty with street signs and curbs and no houses, to suburbs that are really down and troubled, where you see subdivisions that are sort of or parts of that Gulf Coast that are slums in waiting, practically, you say. And then there's the interior life as well. You got down on U.S. 301 in Hillsborough County, where people are kind of lonely and afraid in this world.
It was strange, Tom. You're right. The slums of the future are visible in some of the houses and driveways of these places. I went to a place called Lehigh Acres, which is south of Tampa near Fort Myers, where the highest foreclosure rate in the country can be found. Lehigh Acres was developed in the 1950s by the man who invented Decon rat poison and whose name happened to be Ratner. And it was a very good and successful sort of working class, lower middle class development for both working people and retirees. And now a lot of driveways have weeds growing up between in the pavement, and the yards are unkempt, and it doesn't look like the kind of place where new families would want to relocate to. What you're referring to about Highway 301, I met a woman there named Angie Harris who lives with her five children. Her husband's overseas with the Navy, and she bought in last July, got a very good deal on the house, but then found out that the place had basically stopped being developed. They were not selling any more properties. The sales office was shuttered, and she had almost no neighbors. Her backyard was 5-foot-high overgrown grass, you know, a breeding ground for snakes. She didn't want her children playing outside. And I asked her, well, do you want more neighbors? And she said, not really. What I want is for them to keep up the property. And that interested me. She had a sense that between her and her neighbors, such as they were, there was a kind of wariness of each other, partly, I think, because some of them had bought in early and felt as if they had been taken because the Angie Harrises came after them and got the same house for $100,000 less.
They paid full price and resented the foreclosure generation sort of seeping in behind them.
Exactly. There's such stark differences in what people are now paying and paid a couple of years ago that inevitably in these small and isolated subdivisions, I think there's going to be a kind of cliquishness and resentment and wariness. And at the same time, a pervasive feeling that the word she used was fraud, that people are going to take advantage of her. And she said to me that when she moved to Florida, her auto insurance went up. And when she asked why, the insurer said, Florida is a fraudulent state, meaning, I guess, that insurance fraud is rampant. Well, mortgage fraud was certainly rampant in the middle of this decade, and it was a big part of the housing bubble that burst 2 or 3 years ago. And I think it's left behind a sense that you can't trust anybody. And I think this sense is compounded by the fact that a lot of people in Florida are newcomers. Only 12% of the population was born there, which is the second lowest total after Nevada in the country. And the feeling I got, and it kept coming up over and over, was that whether it's who you marry or who you buy your house from or who your broker is, there's a sense that you can't quite trust it. And yet, at the same time, a wonderful openness and friendliness, which I encountered everywhere I went. So it was a strange, two-faced quality of fear and openness that kind of leaves you off balance.
George, I want to turn right to the ground zero that you're writing so vividly about in The New Yorker this week. George Packer is with us. We're getting callers from Fort Myers, Florida, on exactly that Gulf Coast, right in the territory where you've been traveling and writing. Johnny in Fort Myers, Florida. You're on the air, Johnny. Good to have you. What do you see? Hello, Johnny. Are you there? Hi.
Hi, how are you, sir?
Very well. What do you know?
You had mentioned Lehigh Acres. I actually work in two offices, and one of them actually is in Lehigh Acres. And on my way to work, I pass numerous lots that are absolutely, they look like jungles. I mean, totally unkept. And actually, a whole housing division that they just stopped building. They're just boarded up now. And you get the feeling that, you know, you can kind of see the decay. I also, actually, one of the people who got burned buying these lots, they had these lots in Lehigh Acres that were initially selling for, you know, $5,000 or $10,000, that skyrocketed to $50,000, and people were flipping them left and right, thinking they would make, you know, fast money. And I actually, needless to say, got in there when they were about $40,000, $50,000, and then it crashed. The lot is worth about $3,000 or $4,000 now.
So it took a big bite out of your finances. What about you and the future of Florida, Johnny? Are you there for the long haul? How do you look at what's unfolding there? An opportunity or a one-way meltdown?
Well, I think that everything goes in cycles. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of people get hurt by this. I mean, for the first time that I can remember, the public school system actually announced that they were actually losing students. I mean, I've been here since 1995, and every year it was just growth, 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 and And we're actually seeing a decline in the population, certainly in Lee County. And I'm hearing of people who are actually leaving because they can't afford their houses. But I think as the large baby boomer generation retires, you know, the one advantage Florida has is warm weather. And I think this will pass like all bus cycles have in the past. And I think it'll get better. And I foresee myself here at least until my children graduate from college, which is probably still a good 6 or 7 years out from now.
So. If you can pay for it with those lots having crashed in value. Johnny, thanks very much for your call. George, he puts his finger right on one of your themes. It was all about growth. Then the growth stopped or leveled out anyway. And I guess that's where you get your Ponzi state label.
Yeah, Johnny knows exactly what's going on, and Floridians in general who I talk to do. They're an optimistic people, and their urge is to tell you it's going to get better, and it will get better eventually. But the people I talked to were extremely clear-eyed and realistic about what had happened over the past few years and how, in a sense, almost all of them had been involved in one way or another. The Ponzi scheme metaphor came to me from Gary Mormino of University of South Florida, who's a historian of Florida, and he said, in a way, the state is like a Ponzi scheme. I'll be okay as long as 1,000 people come in after me a day. And that's been, throughout most of this decade, the growth rate of Florida in the 360,000-390,000 a year net migration. That has fallen to 5,000 this fiscal year.
This big
an astonishing fall. Practically zero, and that means the Ponzi scheme has collapsed. The future investors are no longer coming.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about life in the housing collapse in Florida. Bleak, brutal, and broke. George Packer is with us, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine, author of The Assassin's Gate, America in Iraq. He won the Overseas Press Club Book Award for that, has reported from tough spots all over the world. And the Gulf Coast of Florida is a tough spot right now. You can read it this week in The New Yorker. Let's get another call from Ground Zero, Fort Myers, Florida. Grayson, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi. What do you know, Grayson?
Well, I'm still recovering from Charlie. But I attend all these common entity property trainings, and one of the local common entity property law firms said that 30,000 foreclosures will have happened in this immediate area by the end of 2008. They're processing 1,000 in the courthouse, and a lot of them, they can't even foreclose on them because the people are overseas. They've bought several properties, and they can't even find the owners.
How does it feel day to day? Can you feel it in the streets, Grayson?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 1.5 pages in the newspaper for jobs in the classified. That's it.
And no jobs because, what, the job market, as George Packer writes, was built on housing.
Absolutely. Housing and vacations. Service industry.
Will it come back, Grayson? Are you optimistic?
Heck yeah. 2009 is going to be great.
We hope you're just right. Thanks. Let's get one more here from Carlos in Boston. Carlos, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Great topic. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
My house is here in Boston, but my second house is in Hollywood, Florida, which I was living at a time when I lost my son in Iraq. During the hospital and all that, I moved back to Boston, and I've been paying double on taxes to the city of Hollywood where my house is. Because I'm only living in Boston, but what happened is I delay paying my taxes, and they give me a $10,000 penalty, which I still paying. This has been the worst. I came here for the American dream, and this has been my worst nightmare.
Carlos, let me ask you, Hollywood is on the other coast, north of Miami, on the east coast. Now, how are the home prices there? What about rentals? Can you rent it out and make good money?
Well, for the $1,300 that we was asking for rent, people seeing that very high, and then you just walk out your door, look to the left or to the right, and then you see signs for closure, for rent, for sale. And every month we're losing a lot of money in that property, and it's very, very difficult for myself, my family, and can't even grieve the loss of my son who died in Iraq.
Carlos, for that, we grieve with you. let us look at your story right now. George Packer, I mean, this we've got Grayson who says, heck yes, it'll be back. But, you know, you can hear she's not sure of that. And Carlos is dealing with exactly what you describe in great detail. I didn't know the finances of Florida. I mean, you look at taxes there and say this collapse has kind of pulled the plug on the whole state.
Exactly. Well, first, Carlos, you've got my sympathy and my condolences. And also, you're living a very difficult thing because, as you point out, if it's your second home, you don't get the homestead exemption in property taxes, which is what Floridians with their first home in Florida get. It's a big break on property taxes. So there's a wildly uneven system of property taxation. People living next door to each other in the exact same house, depending on when they bought it and whether it's their first home, will pay wildly different property taxes. In Pasco County, where we began with this conversation, near Tampa, property taxes are kept low in order to attract people from the city. But what that means is all the services that they expect to be paid for out there, the schools, the fire stations, because they don't want to live a rural life. They want to live a suburban life in the middle of what was just yesterday a rural county. Those services have to be paid for by bonds that are floated on the expectation that there will be more growth in the future, and that growth is now shut off. So the system of local finance has really dried up. Statewide, Florida's looking at something like $8 billion in shortfalls over the next few years in its projected revenues, and so they are cutting down library hours and cutting, you know, law enforcement expenses. A judge told me that in the civil court in Tampa, he carries 3,000 cases at a time, which just boggles my mind. So the whole state, because it depends on tourism and construction and real estate, and because it doesn't have an income tax, and that is a key factor here, has seen its revenues just dry up in the last couple of years. The state treasurer, Alex Sink, described the situation to me and said, you know, Florida's like the Wild West. If something is too good to be true, we're probably going to be involved in it. And then, you know, the bill comes due and it keeps going in cycles. But there's never been a cycle like this. That's the key thing. Florida's had downturns in the last quarter century, but nothing like this. The growth has never gone down to zero. And so now the question is, will Florida's economy simply go back to what it was before when the country recovers? Or will Florida politicians and leaders begin to think about a new way to build their economy? Because perhaps real estate and housing are not the most stable foundation for growth in the 21st century. And that leads to how will Florida do under the Obama administration?
That would be a whole new world. We'll talk about it. Let's get another call from Fort Myers. Tim, in Florida, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, what do you know?
Well, the boom here in the housing market was caused by the bankers and the home builders that had all these empty lots. You talked about Lehigh Acres earlier, and then, there's Cape Coral.
Mm-hmm.
And you can literally drive for miles and miles, and you're just plated roads with just lots that have been subdivided since the early 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And they sat vacant for years and years. People had equity in their homes up north. They thought they would build a spec home here in Florida. When they couldn't sell the spec home fast enough, they stopped paying on that second or third mortgage they had on their home up north, which had tons of equity in it. And that's what's caused the foreclosure mess. You don't see people being evicted out of their homes. I'm right here right now looking at the golf course, people playing golf, driving by, walking their dogs. It's really no impact on them. What the impact that you see is on these builders. It went from building 10 homes a year to 300 homes a year, couldn't keep up. And then the bankers that did all these liar loans that got people into their homes, or not really homes, they're just spec homes. It's a commodity here. It's not really a home.
Tim, let us pick it up. George, you write a lot about exactly this, that Wild West period, I guess the sort of really getting hot 2005, hotter than it ever been there. Give us a sense of what was going on with banks, loans, speculation, flipping. How wild?
Yeah, I mean, the call is right that the bubble was really created by speculators. A real estate agent in Fort Myers said to me 2/3 of the buyers he saw were speculators who were either buying on spec for themselves or with the intention of flipping within 6 months. And housing is almost a disposable commodity in Florida. People buy and sell with astonishing speed, move a lot. And I met people who had not made a mortgage payment in 12 or 14 months. And once the foreclosure notice came, they just got up and left. And as an earlier caller said, a lot of them can't be found, whether it's the speculators or the homeowners who lived there. People know how to get away without being traced. So it's a strange kind of outlaw mentality about homeownership. I think there are people who've been hit hard who actually are working people who lived in their homes. And I met a few of them who worked in the construction industry. And when that dried up in 2006, they could no longer make their mortgage payments. They had taken out home equity loans based on the increasing value of their houses. They had refinanced. They kept using their house as a cash machine. And when things reached their peak and began to plummet in 2006, suddenly the cash machine stopped dispensing cash. And those people are having to leave their homes and rent in another part of Cape Coral or another part of Fort Myers. I met one woman who had decided to leave Florida, move to New York, where her husband had had to go to find work in the construction industry because there was no more work in Fort Myers and Naples. So it's actually hitting people at every level of society. But I agree with the caller that the real responsibility, the prime responsibility, lies with bankers, mortgage brokers, and state regulators who allowed mortgage fraud to become rampant in Florida. 10,000 criminals, convicted criminals, were mortgage brokers in Florida in the middle of this decade. At a time when felons could not vote, felons were actually getting mortgage broker licenses, and some of them engaged in fraudulent flipping, and that became part of the pressure that created the bubble.
Felons couldn't vote, but they could get mortgage licenses. You write, anyone buying and selling property in Florida in the middle of the decade must have known that the system was essentially a confidence game, that everyone involved was being both taken and taking someone else. Tell us the story of Sunny Kim.
This was a story that was reported by Michael Van Sickler of the St. Petersburg Times. And one element of this story is that at times it seemed like the only institutions that were holding the state and its institutions accountable were a couple of newspapers, the St. Petersburg Times and the Miami Herald. So just in case you thought that, you know, newspapers could go out of existence without any great damage to society, well, in Florida, it's certainly not the case. They need these papers. So Sunny Kim was a Korean-born tattoo parlor owner in Tampa. And according to Van Sickler's reporting, starting in 2004, Sunny Kim bought up about 90 properties around Tampa, mostly in low-income neighborhoods.
90?
And over the 90. Okay. And over the course of 4 years, he cleared $4 million by flipping these properties, in many cases, to buyers who are what mortgage experts call straw buyers. They can't be found afterward. Michael Van Sickler spent a couple of weeks trying to find the buyers. They cannot be traced. So basically, what seems to happen is the guy who buys the property and then resells it finds an associate to be the person on the deed, but that person has no intention of living in the house or of making mortgage payments. The banks, which were just handing money to anyone at that point, would accept an offer of $300,000 on a broken down house in a slum because they didn't go by and look at it. No one appraised it, or the appraisal was inflated. So there was a great deal of fraud going on, and the banks were complicit in it. They allowed themselves to be complicit in it because they wanted a piece of the subprime loan market. And as a result, you had these houses being flipped and people like Sunny Kim making a lot of money. And meanwhile, everyone else's house was being inflated by the fact that so much money was being thrown around on property that couldn't possibly sustain the value. And
drug money being laundered through the center.
There was drug money being laundered. No one has proved that Sunny Kim broke any laws. He's apparently continuing to buy and sell property. There's been no legal action taken against him since Van Sickler's article ran last fall. But clearly there was something wrong here, and the effect that fraudulent activity had on normal buying and selling was it just made everyone's home so overvalued that, and gave them the illusion that they could live off the value of their home, that a lot of people who were not engaged in fraud got into big trouble and are now looking at quite desperate times.
Let's go to Jim in Salt Lake City, Utah. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know?
Well, I read the book, The Great Crash of 1929, back in last September, unfortunately, and the same problem occurred in 1928 in Florida. It seems that all the people that might have known about it died off, memories forgotten. And he actually answered my question just now. What are we going to do about balancing the free market and the regulations that protect the consumer?
Jim, thanks very much for that. George, hold that thought. Let me get one more call right here. Doug in Duxbury, Massachusetts, got a question on the table about how to balance all this. I see you've been in real estate in Florida, Doug. What did you see there?
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
One of the things, I was in Florida for 20 years, half on the East Coast in the Boca area and half on the West Coast, Fort Myers, Naples area.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of things that I find sort of disappointing in some of the comments is nobody was twisting the arms of these people who came down and bought the product. They saw that one of the comments I used to get is, you can buy so much house down here for so much less money than you can up north.
Mm-hmm.
So people were coming down in droves with all their equity from their up north house and all their savings and 401ks and so on, and buying the property and creating a demand. And they've reached a point, at least in the Naples-Fort Myers area, and I suspect most of Florida, where demand was so high, and we're talking about demand now, that there was a backlog of 1.5 to 4 years of sales. In other words, 1.5 to 4 years of construction that builders and developers were able to put under contract but could not provide because demand was so high. And it's really kind of sad that the impression that one would get listening to your guest and some of the callers is that the problem is untrustworthy builders, developers, and bankers, when in fact, most of them, not all, like anywhere, were working within the law.
Doug, let us look at that. We're coming up right up on a break here, but I want to hear from you, George. Doug worked in real estate there. He saw the demand. He said there were no twisted arms. Why blame the bankers and the developers?
Well, I think Doug is partly right. In a sense, there was an epidemic of irresponsibility, which is why it dovetails with the theme that President Obama has sort of stated as the guiding principle of his presidency, a new era of responsibility. Well, it seemed to me he could have been speaking directly to Florida. It's true. People were irresponsible in how much they took out on the basis of the value of their house and how much they were able to put down, sometimes nothing, on their house. And they should have seen it coming because nothing goes up forever. But I don't think it's fair to let bankers and developers and builders off the hook. I mean, Sonny Kim's bankers, the ones who financed the outlandish sales that he was making on slum property.
Without looking, without calling, without knowing anything.
Without even knowing what the property looked like, were Wachovia. I don't want to misspeak and I don't have it right in front of me, but really all the banks that were involved in the Lehman Brothers, Bank of America, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you go down the line, they were all the banks that were involved in the Wall Street meltdown last September. And Michael Van Sickler, while reporting the Sonny Kim story, suddenly began seeing the banks named in his story on the front page of the paper as part of the crisis of the financial markets. Well, don't you think there's some connection between what happened on Wall Street and what was happening in Belmont Heights and Sulphur Springs around the Tampa area?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about life in the housing collapse in Florida with New Yorker magazine writer George Packer. His article out this week in the magazine, a big one, is entitled, headline, The Ponzi State. He's reported from all over the world, but the Gulf Coast of Florida right now, just about as rich an environment for reporting as you could find anywhere. We're getting a lot of Florida stories, George, and I want to just keep them coming. Naples, Florida. Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm glad you guys are on the air down here. I moved to Florida 5.5 years ago and bought a home in Florida I bought a business as well, but when I bought the home, they asked for no proof of income whatsoever. I couldn't believe it because being in business for 20 years in New York, I had to give a blood sample to get a bank loan. Down here, I bought a house with nothing. No proof of income, nothing.
Zero. Just sign on the bottom line.
Yeah, about 50 times, but sign on the line, yeah.
How's that gone, Bob? How's that worked out for you?
Well, it's worked out okay because my business is okay. So I can afford the mortgage on my home, although I recently tried to refinance it and found out I've lost 20% of the value. And I bought 5.5 years ago, not 2 or 3 years ago, when it was at the height.
So lucky for you, but there was zero investigation of what your income was when you bought. Let's get another call from Fort Myers. Scrod, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. Is your name really Scrod? Is that possible?
It sure is.
Okay. Like the fish. Let's go. What do you know?
Well, what I've noticed down here, I've been here over 20 years, and there seems to be a profound disrespect for the environment and almost an ignorance and an arrogance among local leaders, especially city and county governments, with a very short-sighted kind of actually lack of a plan for growth in the area, really beholden to the developers. And it's almost like we put all your eggs in one basket here. And, you know, it's even without the crisis, there would be a critical mass where there's not going to be building anymore. So it's almost like just one industry is the engine of this whole area of Florida.
Let us look at that. George, this caught your eye as well, the sort of attitude toward the world, the land, ignorance and arrogance, says our caller. What do you say?
Yeah, it struck me that there seemed to be a kind of short-term thinking that they'll come tomorrow. The thousand will keep coming tomorrow. And
that is the thousand new home buyers or residents?
Exactly, which has been statistically true until the last year or so. And that will allow us to just keep growing, keep taxes low. If it's a low-wage state, that's okay because it's fairly cheap to live there. But there are people in Florida like the caller, like some politicians and academics I talk to who are becoming critical of this attitude. The representative in Congress from Tampa, Kathy Castor, said, "We got hit by both Bushes, George and Jeb." And Jeb Bush was governor of Florida from 98 to 06. And she said during those years, county politicians in Hillsborough County, which is where Tampa is, and other places were, as the caller said, very much in the pocket of developers who, as long as they were able to keep the suburban sprawl going, kept supporting those politicians. And no one was sort of looking ahead and saying, where does this all lead? Where does it end? What's it doing to our quality of life? And Pam Iorio, who's the mayor of Tampa, said to me, this is causing us to reassess everything. And I think some people in Florida are reassessing. Have we really been thinking clearly about the best way for us to grow as a state? She wants to get mass transit into Tampa. It's the second largest metropolitan area in the country without a light rail system after Detroit. For years, it's been delayed and deferred, and county politicians have said no, it would cause a slight increase in sales taxes. She says we have to do it because that's the only way we're going to attract the industries of the future. People will not want to live in a metropolitan area where commuting takes hours in a car, and the car culture is very strong in Florida, as it is in a lot of parts of the country. So in a way, the question is, can Florida reinvent itself as a 21st century state, which will still have sunshine, but which will also have green energy projects, people attracted by the state universities and by the cities? And that's a key thing that several people said to me. During the next decade, we're going to see a return to the cities. And the question is whether Florida's cities will make life more livable for their residents and reverse this migration outward that created this sprawl into the suburbs and the housing bubble in the first place.
And the ghost subdivisions.
Subdivisions.
Kristen, in Newburyport, Massachusetts. Kristen, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I am a native Floridian. I grew up outside of Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And my family still lives in the Tallahassee area. And I'm just curious how this is affecting the northern part of Florida, because it seems to be a lot more of native Floridians as opposed to people coming from up north. And I'm just curious if the crash is as bad or how it relates to the south part of Florida.
Let's see what we know. George, did you look across the state or just at the Gulf Coast? What do you know?
I don't know about the panhandle in the north, but I would guess that the what the caller is suggesting may be right, that it was never as inflated there because that's not vacation land. That's not retirement land, and or at least not as much as the southern part of the state. And so it didn't – the bubble didn't get as big and tight. I was focused on the Gulf Coast. It interested me because people know a lot more about the east coast of South Florida, which is where New Englanders, New Yorkers have gone historically, and it's the more upscale part of the state. From Tampa down to Fort Myers, people come from the Midwest down to that part of the state. They come from Michigan, Illinois, Ohio. They speak of the I-75 trail that leads people down to Tampa and Naples and Fort Myers and Cape Coral. It's a more middle class and lower middle class retiree. And what interested me was people I talked to kind of brought with them or remembered from their parents Midwestern values of frugality and caution and living within your means. And that came up again and again in conversations, that somehow they had forgotten or gotten away from what they learned from their parents and that they needed to recover those values. And that is part of the reassessment that I think the economic crisis may well be spurring across the country. I see Florida as a kind of funhouse mirror, which exaggerates and makes extreme what's true about the entire country. Florida is not some weird exception. It's just a more extreme version of what really has happened all across the country.
Let's go to Andy in Lehigh Acres, Florida. Again, right in your turf there, George. Andy, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Very well. What do you see there, Andy?
Well, I'm an electrical contractor down here, so I've been riding the roller coaster here for the last few years. Right. I started off back at the end of 2003, beginning of 2004, and I had purchased a house around the same time. And, I had remortgaged while everything was going crazy, put money into the business, bought a lot of trucks. We're flying high, doing all kinds of work, and then, everything kind of came crashing down. Ended up getting divorced. The house has been taken back by the bank.
So you're living the undream there at the moment. When you look ahead, what do you see, Andy?
Well, I tell you what, it's still looking pretty tough. I'm kind of retrenched and, trying to target a different type of market than I was targeting before, which is, the track home, MDU type market. But Naples has seemed to be a little more resistant to a lot of this. Home sales have been up the last 11 months in Naples, sales of existing homes, and I think Naples is more poised for a rebound pretty quickly here. And we're still seeing some custom building going on down here, the million-dollar-plus market. And I think, sometime toward the end of the year, we're going to start seeing some turnaround here. With the foreclosures, the prices are down so much. I mean, you can buy a three-bedroom, two-bath house down here for $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 now. So, that's what's attracting a lot of buyers back. And, the affordability and the sunshine, it'll bring people back. And, I don't think it'll ever be like it was during those crazy years, but I think it will be back.
Andy, we hope you make it. Thanks very much for your call. George, I'm always thinking of how you're hearing these callers because you've reported so much on just these things. I mean, there's the attitude you report out of Florida that, look, we've got the sunshine. People are going to come for it. We will be back. And Andy there, the electrical contractor, pointing up at Naples a little tonier and saying maybe that's where the comeback starts. What do you say?
Yeah, I wish I'd met Andy when I was down there, and I wish him the best, and I like his attitude. It's an attitude I kept encountering. There is no perceptible self-pity or sense of being, victimized in an unfair way. There's a kind of a pluckiness that's really attractive. But I think it is going to be a while before things return to anything like a stable situation where people in the construction business can make enough of a living to afford the house they bought a few years ago. Naples is an upscale retirement community. Rather like St. Petersburg near Tampa, and those places have not been hit as hard as the working communities like Pasco County and Fort Myers and Cape Coral. And so they have been a bit resistant. But I met a lumberyard owner in Naples who's seen his business shrink by about 75 or 80% over the last few years, which shows that even in Naples, the building industry came close to a complete stop. People talked about as if you could see the air going out of the tires or as if the lights went out. It was so dramatic that the people at the leading edge of the economy, the realtors, were the first ones to notice. And in my article, I have the image of the Looney Tunes character who's out in midair and doing fine and then suddenly looks down, and that's when gravity takes over.
But what about it? The ocean of boomers. Does it eventually rise up into the sunshine and bail the whole place out and start the whole cycle over again? I mean, it's such a big demographic bulge. Is it inevitable that it ends up in southern Florida and bails all this out? Or, I don't know, if people can't retire, have to work longer, can't get out of their homes because home values have fallen, is there something inevitable to a comeback here or not?
Well, I think there's two questions. One, there are other parts of the Southeast that are now attracting retirees, you know, places like the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, Alabama, places like Georgia, the Carolinas. So Florida is no longer the only retirement destination. Mm-hmm. And the other question is, will the boomers be able to afford a retirement home? I mean, a lot of them have lost, what, 30% of the value of their retirement and are maybe looking at having to find a new job after planning to retire from their lifelong one. I mean, it depends on whether we're in the middle of Great Depression 2, as some people are beginning to wonder, or whether this is a severe recession, but one that's going to correct itself in a year or so. My sense is, and this is only a sense, this is big. This is a country-changing event. I went to Florida because I wanted to see the effect of the precipitating cause of the crisis right at ground level. And Florida is one place, Nevada, California, Arizona, or others, where you can really feel it and see it in people's lives at every level of society, from the farm workers up to the big developers in Tampa. And what I found was it's as if a hurricane blew through. And it's an appropriate metaphor for Florida, obviously, and laid waste to people's jobs and their lives. And no one knows when it's going to pick back up. This is a hurricane on a level that no one alive today in Florida has seen in Florida. And so no one can know whether in 2 years the boomers are going to be flooding down there and everything is going to be fine.
What might a Florida economy look like, though, without a housing engine at the heart of it? I mean, that would be such a radical transformation from your description here. Is it solar panels wall to wall? And what do you build in Florida if it's not built on housing?
Yeah, I asked a lot of politicians who I talked to, you know, what would you do with the infrastructure piece of the stimulus package? And Pam Iorio, the mayor of Tampa, said, if only we had light rail, shovel ready and all set to go, we could use it to build a light rail system, but they don't have it. And that's true in other ways in other parts of the state. Some people talked about weatherizing homes against hurricanes, solar panels. Wind is not a big source of energy in Florida, but there's some work going on in solar. They have a good higher education system, but they also have a very low tax base. And so I think there's a limit right now to how much industry can be created out of the big universities. It's not like Research Triangle North Carolina, which has been, a huge source of growth for North Carolina. I think people said to me that the politics of the state, the political culture, is at the core of the problem, because there is a sense of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, which is what one professor said to me. In other words, just let it take care of itself. And there isn't enough right now of a political mass to change the way Tallahassee does business, whether it's tax structure or strategic planning for the economy or whatever. It's just been let the engine keep going. Well, the engine has shut off. And I think Floridians are going to have to decide whether they want to put people in state government who have a different vision than let's let the developers do their job.
We heard the governor, Charlie Crist, pushing awfully hard for the stimulus package, Obama stimulus package. Connie Mack, a congressman down there, voting against it in the House, drawing pretty sharp fire from Jim Birch, the mayor of Cape Coral, I'm reading here, complaining, saying, look, we need that stimulus package to flow. He said, politics has no business where the people and the despair I see in my city are concerned.
That's a very interesting quote. I hadn't heard that. And it tells me that the sort of traditional thinking of Republicans when a Democrat is in office and wants to spend a lot of money, which is let's just cut taxes and also cut spending, may not fly this time around because these communities are hurting and everyone is looking to the federal government as the spender of last resort. It's the old Keynesian model. And right now, Florida is a great example of a place that cannot spend its own way out of this. There's a balanced budget provision in the state constitution. As Paul Krugman writes, we've got 50 Herbert Hoovers in America, 50 state governors who have to balance their budgets. That's not what you do in a recession as deep as this. And so for a local congressman to be voting against or senator to be speaking against the stimulus package, I think carries a political risk. And that's a big political change in America from just a few years ago. Oh. And Florida also obviously went for Obama. Hillsborough County went for Obama, which was a real bellwether county. And people in Florida were suggesting, you know, it's kind of gone blue, red, red, blue. Is it a long-term political change that we're now seeing in Florida? I think that's possible.
George Packer, we hope you go back and keep track of what rises up out of the housing collapse in Florida. The article in The New Yorker this week is The Ponzi State. George, it's always great talking with you. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Hail invaders and tan crusaders worshiping the sun. On the corner of walk and don't walk, somewhere on US-1. I'm back to live in Florida. Blue skies and ultraviolet rays. Looking for a better day.